Last night, last thing I did before I went to bed was sat down in front of the TV, watch a good movie, sit down in front of the TV and check the weather, something much more spiritual. And I'm spinning the dial because I didn't know who was on that time of night with news, and I have to be very, very careful. We don't have cable in that sense, cable TV. Our house is right below a ridge in Spokane, kind of an area of high rock, and we can't receive the local TV signals. And so we have to actually pay for cable service to get the local channels. And they have a special program for about $7 a month. You get the local channels by cable. And then they throw in a few channels that nobody else wants, and they let you watch those as well. So I'm flipping around, and whenever I do that at night, I have to be very careful, because when I get to channel 31, I have to close my eyes. There is oftentimes something rather lewd and very explicit being programmed at night on channel 31. And I find that if I actually click on channel 31, there is a temptation to actually stop and see what it is. And so I consciously will click, 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 pass before I can register. And there have been times when I've actually gone the other way around. Now, men don't actually punch in specific numbers. That's not how you use a remote. Men have to click channel by channel. So don't ask me why I don't just go to the channel I want. It's just not the way we do it. But I get to channel 31 and I have to literally buzz on by to keep from some little hook reaching out and saying, hey, stop for a second, look at this. Our environment encourages us, in fact, it even pushes us to become sexually focused. And when we're sexually focused, we are sexually involved. The connection is automatic. And you know what it means to be involved, right? It means to have a relationship. So to be sexually involved outside of marriage means to have a relationship that is sin. And yet our society pushes it, encourages it, draws and entices, and it's around us in almost every form we can imagine. Now this isn't some new issue, obviously. It's an issue that the church has addressed over the years. One of the ways we used to address this issue is warning you and others about STDs or sexually transmitted diseases. And we had booklets that talked about how many different kinds of diseases are how bad and how many have died. And you know what? That's a very legitimate process. AIDS has had a lot of press lately. It's a very prominent disease. So I in no way want to depreciate the problems associated with the downside. But what I want to do today is to encourage you to look at sexual involvement a little differently than that. I want you to look at the benefits of avoiding sexual involvement altogether. Now, I'm not talking about celibacy. I haven't heard the council go through and set up any monasteries recently. So I'm not talking about celibacy, but I am talking about avoiding sexual involvement entirely outside of a marriage relationship. The benefits of abstinence, as I use it in this context, are enormous. And they go far beyond simply avoiding sickness and disease. How many of you have actually driven or ridden across the Golden Gate Bridge here? Look at that. That's enormous. My daughter, Megan, is in the fifth grade. And she has classmates who have driven with their families across the Golden Gate Bridge. And so when we went down to California last summer, she said, Daddy, can we go see the Golden Gate Bridge? I didn't even know she knew what it was. And so we did. We drove across the Golden Gate Bridge. The Golden Gate Bridge is balanced on two towers, 746 feet high. And two enormous cables snake up over the tops of those towers and are buttressed into the rock on both sides with phenomenal amounts of concrete. And the bridge is suspended from those cables out over the bay down in San Francisco. The center span is 4,200 feet long and it's suspended 265 feet above the water. That's 26 stories tall. So if you were on top of a 26-story building and you went over to the edge and looked down, that would be how far it would be down to the water line. Now, have you ever laid out a 2x4 on the ground? Or have you ever walked up to the curb on the edge of the parkway and then walked along on top of that few inches of space? It's pretty easy, isn't it? What happens, though, when you take the 2x4 and you stick it up 10 feet in the air? What happens when it's this handrail right here that's up there maybe a story and a half, and you have to walk along on that? Changes the whole perspective. You can walk on it on the ground, but when you put that up in the air, it is an incredible risk. I had the opportunity to climb the Grand Teton 2 summers ago. And there's a particular place on the Grand Teton, if you use one of the traditional climbing routes, where you're walking along a ledge, and the ledge kind of comes into like an open book shape, and the ledge kind of stops. And then on the other side of the open book shape is another ledge that kind of starts and then goes off to the right in the other direction. And what you do is you walk along to one point, and then you have to turn and step across the open space to the other side. Now, where you're standing, your feet are quite solid, and your hands are hanging on, probably leaving imprints on the rock. And where you're going to step is a normal step, and if you made it on the ground, you wouldn't think twice. But in this case, there's about 1,500 feet of air between your legs. It's just absolutely straight down. When I stepped across, I couldn't look down. I couldn't stop and focus. I had to look at the handrails, so to speak. I had to keep my hands where I knew they would, and I had to step and balance my weight as you went across and then grab onto the other side. The Golden Gate Bridge has railings running on both sides of the roadway. There is protection. They make you feel safe, and they make you feel secure. If you tore those railings down and simply wiped them off of that bridge, and you just had the flat roadway, it would be incredibly hard to drive across. It would be like driving across a large board 265 feet up in the air. Proper boundaries are our friends. Those rails that are put in place make us totally secure. You drive across the Golden Gate Bridge in a car and you know there's a rail there, even if you're in the outside lane, you are basically secure, and you know it. Take down the rail, and you won't believe, you won't be able to get to the middle fast enough. It changes the whole way you'll see the position you're in. Why do teenagers so often feel insecure? Because society has removed the handrails, and because they have encouraged you to do the same. And it's like lifting that board up in the air without the rails on the sides. In reality, it's hundreds of feet to the bottom. And anyone in their right mind would indeed feel secure. Song of Solomon. Don't use it much in sermons. There's been a lot of demand for it. Song of Solomon 8, verse number 8. There's a description here. I'm trying to be just graphic enough to not get booted out, but not so graphic that, you know, I offend. We have a family, so I'm going to be reading the Bible, though. I didn't pick this off the newsstand. And so I do want to give it in the context it's in. Now, I'm not going to give you the whole background for the Song of Solomon, but we're going to at least break into the context here. Song of Solomon 8, verse 8. We have a little sister, and she has no breasts. What shall we do for our sister in the days when she is spoken for? It's talking about starting with a little girl before she matures sexually and emotionally. And the brothers here effectively are saying, or her protectors, whichever it would be, or it says our sister, but still, what shall we do for her? Basically, how are we going to handle this until she grows up and is given to another? If she is a wall, we will build upon her a battlement of silver. If she is a wall, you can't go through a wall. It's a protection. If she is a wall, then we're going to hang ornaments of silver and great blessings and ornamentation on top, and it's going to be a wondrous thing. If she is a door, now what do you think that refers to? Hi, door's open, come on in. If our sister is a door, we will enclose her with boards of cedar. We'll make a wall ourselves and protect her from those things that she ought to be rightly protected from. Then the sister here responds, I am a wall, and my breasts are like towers. All right, you guys, you got it wrong. Breasts are like towers means they're out of sight, they're protected, you can't get there. They're not for you, they're protected behind my wall. Okay, that's what it says. Then I became in his eyes as one who found peace. It's not saying how insecure she is. It's saying how much peace she has because she's behind a wall and you can't get at her and she's protected and she has an opportunity and a right and proper way to grow up and mature until she is spoken for. Having absolute limits on where you will go and what you will do and what you will not do gives you confidence, it gives you assurance, and it gives you peace. You walk around without the wall and the rails and the protective devices that rightfully need to be in place, and you will have insecurity, and you will be threatened by the values of those around you who would like to walk through that door and imbibe of what you have to offer. Sexual relationships do not begin in the bedroom. They do not begin in the back of a car. They begin when you start to pair off in your mind. That's where the relationship begins. Being willing to wait will pay dividends for the rest of your life. The blessings of abstinence provide an enormous return. I brought a book with me. Many of you, or at least some, will be familiar with. The Lukers have referred to it, at least in one case I know of, in the young adults' presentations, and so I'm not sure. I Kissed Dating Goodbye by Joshua Harris. I'm not going to go through the book today. That's not my point. I do want to read you something from the book, which illustrates very well the difference between maybe a door and a wall, or maybe a crack in a wall and a wall. This is reading from the midst of his book. It says, it turns out a scientist can see the future by watching four-year-olds interact with a marshmallow. You can see what's going to happen by setting a four-year-old down with a marshmallow in front of him. The researcher invites the children one by one into a plain room and begins the gentle torment. You can have this marshmallow right now, he says, but if you wait until I run an errand, you can have two marshmallows when I get back, and then he leaves. Some children grab the treat the minute he's out of the door. Some last a few minutes before they give in, but others are determined to wait. They cover their eyes, they put their heads down, they sing to themselves, they try to play games, they even fall asleep. When the researcher returns, he gives these children their hard-earned marshmallows. The ones who waited get double. And then science waits for them to grow up. By the time the children reach high school, something remarkable has happened. A survey of the children's parents and teachers found that those who as four-year-olds had the fortitude to hold out for a second marshmallow generally grew up to be better adjusted, more popular, not less popular, more popular, adventurous, confident, dependable teenagers. The children who gave into temptation early on were more likely to be lonely, easily frustrated, and stubborn. They buckled under stress, and they shied away from challenges. I want to tell you that the blessings of abstinence are real. We're not talking about the penalties for messing around. I'm talking about the blessings of doing it the right way. Now, I went out yesterday and I picked up 10 of these books, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, and I'm hoping to bill some of that at least to the Spokane congregation, but I picked up 10 of these books. And they're out on a table right outside the door here. And I want to make an offer to the teenagers especially. If you're a young adult, you ought to have some means at your disposal maybe and buy your own if you wish to. But I want to make an offer. You can have one for free if you'll promise me two things. First is, promise me that if you pick it up, you will actually read it. I don't want books being given out just so that they can grace the bookshelf. I'm trying to share valuable information. You don't have to come to me. The books are out the door after services. But promise that you'll do two things. One, if you pick one up, you'll read it. Two, after you're done reading it and you're finished with this book in terms of getting the information, that you will pass it on and give it to someone else. Now, if I could have afforded or kind of talked somebody into buying 40 books, I'd have given one to everybody or 50, but I didn't have the means to do so. So that's the best way I know how to dispense the information, at least for your consideration in this case. Pick one up. They're free. Take it with you. Read it and pass it on. Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse number 4. Now we're comparing here someone who's in a position for love in terms of time in their life and relationship, and then turning around and talking to somebody younger who's not there yet. Verse 4. He brought me to the banqueting house. His banner over me was love. Sustain me with cakes of raisins. Refresh me with apples. I am lovesick. You know, the wording, the analogies, the word pictures are a little different than we would have today, but the meaning is quite easily discerned. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand embraces me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, you younger ones, you who are not ready for love, not just ready emotionally, but ready in terms of being able to make commitment and to follow through. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles, by the does of the field, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases. Don't get there before you want to be there. Don't click to channel 31 and hook on to the program because you're going to be somewhere before you're ready. Absolutely, you'll be there before you're ready. The word pleases here is translated in a variety of ways, different translations. In the Hebrew, it generally means to take pleasure or to have delight in. Now, the New Revised Standard Version states it this way. Do not stir up or awaken love until it is ready. Don't stir it up until you have a place for it to go properly. Because once it is stirred up, it quickly expands and envelops those participating in it. Very, very important. That's the only way for peace. I had a chance in Portland now a little over a year ago to give what was a split sermon then, Don't Crush Your Can. And I used the analogy of a can that was crushed and how hard it is to get back to shape. And then I basically said, but isn't it great that God in His mercy has taken my can and made it back to its original shape? I talked about my son. How many of you were in Portland that would remember? Okay, I'm speaking to quite a few of you. I talked about my son and how I wasn't there when he was born, and I wasn't there as he grew up, and I wasn't there until he graduated from high school, and then we started a relationship. And I talked about how God had allowed that relationship to then be restored at that point and how good that relationship was. You see, I was holding up a can that I admitted had cracks and fractures in it, but that somehow had still been able to be refilled with water anyway. I guess what I didn't see at that time was just how fragile some of them cracks and fractures were. Right now, year plus later, I have absolutely no contact with my son. I can't call because he doesn't answer, and if I write, he won't open the letter. And that means he has no contact with my wife and no contact with Megan or Derek, his stepbrother and sister, which we only called ever anything brother and sister and nothing between. I don't have a clue. And I don't know when I'll have contact with him again. You know, it might even look good for a time, but when you crush those cans, the risk is enormous. Don't awaken love before it's time. When I was growing up, there was a popular song. I still hear it on the radio from time to time. You don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You don't pull the mask off the old Lone Ranger. And you don't mess around with Jim. There's some things you just don't mess around with. You just don't do it. You don't awaken love before it's time. And when you leave love alone and keep it in its proper place until it can be opened to blossom, therein lies security. It's those handrails that went up on the bridge and you now drive across comfortably. Therein lies security and confidence and control and power in a right and proper way. Unfortunately, we are so used to compromising and to being compromised that it is hard to understand just how powerful for good those barriers are. It isn't a sliding scale. Love starts in your mind. You draw the line at the beginning of the process, not before the consummation of the act. And these foolish, reckless arguments that have been purported in our media and otherwise as sometimes of sex or not sex and some kinds of love or not love is absolutely ungodly. Being single is a gift from God. It's not something that needs to be fixed. It is not something that means you are broken. Being single is a gift from God that lays, hopefully, an important foundation, a wall on which towers of silver can then be erected because of the base that is there, that has been established. Some of my best friendships were formed when I was still single. I was in college. And these individuals who then became lifelong friends, they and I were dating some of the same ladies in college. There were women that I danced with. There were women that I took to Bible study or to services, that joined at social occasions and went to the clubs. There were ladies there that I had taken to dinner and to other activities to whom now my friends are married. I could not look them in the eye, and they could not be my friend. If anything inappropriate had happened whatsoever, I would have lost those treasures. And yet, at the time, we all dated around widely. You didn't know ultimately who your good friends yet were going to be. And yet I could sit down with my friends from school, and I could sit at the same table at dinner with their wife, and who I also dated, and retain those friendships. The railings on the side of the Golden Gate Bridge are a blessing, not a curse. They produce comfort and security. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 17. He who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. Flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. And the first thing that pops up in our mind is AIDS or some other disease, probably. Well, what if you're only holding hands? You're going to get AIDS? What if you're only holding each other really, really close? You're going to get a disease? I don't think so. Probably not. Still, God says you sin against your body. Well, how do you do that if you don't get sick? Well, it happens in your mind. When you awaken love, it changes the way you think. It changes the way you begin to look at others. It changes the things you compare because it changes what it is that you remember. And it changes the things and the people you compare it to. When you awaken love before it's time. Verse 19, don't you know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? You don't have the right to just do it any way that you please. You were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. The sexual relationship in marriage and all of the steps that lead up to it are a type of our unity in relationship to God. It is a very high thing. There is a very special blessing in saving your body for God. Go up to verse 13, back in the same passage, just early on. The body is not for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. There is a higher purpose than simply to get carnal and reproduce. When I was a child, I wanted one time to give something very nice to my mother. I can't remember if it was her birthday or a special occasion, a holiday at that time, but I wanted to give her something very nice. I wanted to give her a piece of jewelry, and so I stole it. And I presented it to her all wrapped up, and when she unwrapped it, she knew that I could not have possibly afforded that gift. And so she questioned me about where I got it, and I lied. And she continued to question me, and I continued to lie, wanting to please my mother with this great gift. You know what? She never, ever wore it. You know why? Because she absolutely did not know whose it might have been. And she simply did not want to look over her shoulder everywhere she went, wondering, indeed, maybe this was yours. Or maybe this was missing from your store, and she did not want to be attached to it in that way. She always would have wondered. I gave her something I had no right to give. If you sin sexually, you can repent. God can forgive you. But you can never be a virgin again. That is a gift you only offer one time, and it is gone in all your life. You get to offer that gift just once. American Heritage Dictionary, I looked up the word virgin. And in respect to human relationships, it means that you haven't had sexual intercourse. You haven't gone all the way. That's what virgin means in human relationships. But it also is used in other ways. It's used in reference to the ground, as in virgin ground. It's used in reference to, say, snow, like in the mountains we came over, as in virgin snow. And it means that that's the best that there is, and that that is pure, and that it is natural, and the dictionary said untouched. That's the meaning, even used in a physical way. Untouched. It referred to it as well in terms of when the West was settled and the expansion of the United States took place, as in the Virgin West. It included that as well. And it described that as meaning unused, uncultivated, unexplored. Something can only be untouched and unexplored once. Abstinence is power. It builds confidence, it builds security, and it builds trust. Being a wall instead of a door until it's time to awaken love is a blessing from God, and it has great power and benefit. Now, some of you sitting here have likely been tricked and taken advantage of sexually or otherwise. Some of you in this room, if we could go around and very privately find out, likely have been molested as well. And something very valuable was taken from you. Well, it was also taken from me. In that sense, we have lost together. But then I went on very foolishly and threw even more away. It's one thing to have something happen to you or to me. It is another thing when we go on and dispense of our own will or pleasure those things that God intended to be maintained. We bear in us, therefore, some loss, but we can still fulfill God's purpose. In Ephesians 5, God portrayed love in marriage And Christ said that His love sanctifies and cleanses us. He said the church, as a result, becomes glorious. Even though it was damaged and injured from the start, taken advantage of and then disposed of and cast aside, as a result of the love of Christ, the church becomes glorious, without spot or wrinkle, holy, and without blemish. And Hebrews 13 describes the relationship in marriage of love and the sexual relationship obviously included in that, and what the status of that then becomes for those people who have saved themselves, who have set that aside, who have not awakened love before its time, and for those people who have been cleaned up and purified by the blood of Jesus Christ. Hebrews 13, verse 4, marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Those who continue in that course, those who refuse to turn aside. God can clean us up, but we must choose to be clean as well. There are great blessings in abstinence. Blessings of confidence, blessings of peace, the fruitfulness of a sound mind and an intimate relationship with God. God's way does work, but only if it's applied fully and well.